Thanks for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. This week, Pastor Jim continues our series, Teach Us to Pray.
Again, it is a tremendous privilege to be with you again, a year older, hopefully a year wiser, although some may question that. Well, we've been in the midst of this series that we've called Teach Us to Pray. And in this series, we've been looking at the Lord's Prayer, which is found in Matthew chapter 6, verses 9 through 13. A couple weeks back, Pastor Daniel began the series by talking about Jesus' introductory remarks to the prayer that he used to teach his disciples to pray. In Matthew chapter 6, verses 5 through 8, Jesus reveals God's expectations for when people pray. And in those verses, we saw that God's expectation is for authenticity in prayer. He talked about not just repeating yourself over and over and over again, not just throwing words out there flippantly. He talked about not praying to be a spectacle for other people, but to have an intimate relationship with God the Father, to commune one-on-one authentically. Hold on to that thought because it's going to come into play this morning. Then 2 weeks ago, Pastor Ken introduced us to the Lord's Prayer, and he spoke from Matthew chapter 6, verse 9, where Jesus taught his disciples to pray, "Our Father in heaven, may your name be kept holy." And when we recite those words, we assume a posture of prayer. I don't know about you, but for me, it's really important to kind of be reminded of that when I'm praying. If I'm not careful, when I'm praying, I can pray like I'm talking to Siri. God, give me this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this. And I forget that I'm talking to the God, to the Creator of the universe. And so Matthew chapter 6, verse 9 allows us to kind of center on the fact that we are acknowledging the God of the universe. Our Father in heaven, may your name be kept holy. In essence, when we pray that, we assume a posture whereby we say, may you be acknowledged as God. And then last week, Pastor Daniel continued our series by looking at Matthew chapter 6, verse 10, where it says, may your kingdom come soon. May your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And when we pray those words, we recalibrate our life from focusing on our will, our selfish desires, and the promotion of our own kingdom to a focus on aligning our will with His and to the promotion of His kingdom instead of my own. It has the effect of realigning our perspective. Well, this morning we turn our attention to Matthew chapter 6, verse 11. And in verse 11, Jesus makes a shift from the macro to the micro. He makes a shift from a global perspective to the personal realm. I must confess that far too many times my prayers start here with a list of personal petitions. A few years back, I took a class at when I was working my doctorate, and this concept kind of surfaced, and so I want to share it with you this morning. A lot of times, and I've got a picture of this, a lot of times I believe we treat prayer, we treat God, as this genie in the bottle. If I just rub the lamp, poof, my wish is granted. How many of you ever approach God that way? Yeah. I think if we're honest, all of us. Now, I know that that is kind of an antiquated illustration, right? Kind of an older illustration. So I want to modernize it a little bit. So how about this one? Hey, Siri, give me the score of the Royals game. Hey, Siri, give me the score of the Royals game. It's not working. Do you understand? We live in a day and an age where I can ask anything of my cell phone. And most of the time, Siri cooperates. We live in a day and age where we have this instrument, the Amazon Echo. People have them in their homes. I don't own one, but people have them in their homes, and they can ask Amazon Echo anything, or ask Alexa, right? And Alexa answers, responds. Friends, if we're not careful, then we may find ourselves approaching God like we do Siri or like we do Alexa. That's why it is so important for us to assume an appropriate posture, to once again acknowledge Him is God, to once again realign our perspective around God's will and His kingdom values. And when I do that, I all of a sudden am in the proper posture to bring my needs before God. God is not a genie in a bottle. God is not Siri. When we approach God, we say, "Our Father in heaven, may your name be kept holy. May your kingdom come soon. May your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." And now let's look at Matthew chapter 6, verse 11, where it says, "Give us today the food we need." On Friday night, I went to Buffalo Wild Wings for dinner. And while I was there waiting for a table, I noticed a guy standing there at the counter wearing a Grubhub shirt. He was carrying one of those insulated food delivery bags. He was actually waiting for an order to go so that he could deliver the food directly to the person who placed the order. And I knew that I was going to be preaching on this verse this morning, and all of a sudden it hit me. Here in Olathe, from the comfort of our own homes, we can ask Siri or Alexa for an order of boneless chicken wings with mango habanero sauce, blue cheese dressing, and a side of celery, and it's just a matter of moments before it will be delivered directly to my door. Give us today the food we need. I don't know about you, but that really concerns me. Jesus prayed this prayer to his Father in heaven. Jesus prayed this prayer. You see, Jesus was truly dependent upon his Father's provision for his daily bread. And here's the thing, Jesus had every confidence that his Father was going to provide for him. He had every confidence that his Father was going to meet his need. You see, Jesus prayed believing. So here's a question I have for you this morning. So how do we pray? How do we earnestly pray? How do you and I authentically pray? Give us today the food we need in our Hey Siri world. Let's take a few minutes this morning to unpack this verse together. I want to make a couple of observations about this verse. The first observation that I want to call your attention to from this verse is the fact that Jesus' prayer is in real time. By this, I mean that Jesus is teaching his disciples to pray today for the food that they will need tomorrow. Can I just say this? That when you pray in real time, it requires you to be dependent upon God. And guess what? When your prayer is answered, you have nowhere to turn. You have no one to thank but God himself. Let's just do a quick survey around the room today. Who here in the room shops by the meal? And by this, I mean you typically like stop at Quick Trip and you grab just kind of a snack and tide you over. And, you know, you stop at a fast food restaurant maybe for lunch and kind of takes care of you. You may choose to go out for dinner at a restaurant. Or if you do want to cook something at home, you just go and you get enough for that meal and you go home and you prepare it. Nobody? Come on, I did that for years. I've done that for decades. Okay? I've tried to change that. But some of us shop by the meal. Okay, who here shops for the week? Okay? And if you shop for the week, you're probably going to, you might be going to Aldi and getting some stuff there, and you might go to Hy-Vee and purchase some stuff there, and you stop at Price Chopper when they've got good deals, right? Kind of changes this whole idea of daily bread, doesn't it? When we have the accessibility of grocery stores where we can shop for the week, when we have refrigerators in our homes that can preserve the food, when we have these huge pantries that obviously need to be filled. And then in our society, how many of you shop by the month? Come on, so I know some of you have memberships to Costco and Sam's Club, and you're doing some shopping for the month, right? So much in our society drives us towards self-reliance. And away from reliance on God. Most of our homes, if not all of our homes, are equipped with refrigerators that allow us to store food for an extended period of time. We can purchase non-perishables and we can stock our cabinets. Some of us have a deep freeze, which allowed my mom to store hundreds of pounds of blueberries at a time. And I can assure you, that is more than a daily supply for an average family. Give us today the food we need as a prayer in real time. So let me ask you a very personal question. When was the last time that you actually prayed this prayer? And by that I mean not just reciting the words. When was the last time that you felt dependent upon God to meet your need for the food that you will need tomorrow? For most of us in this room, I would guess that it's been a very long time. Can I confess something to you this morning? In the past 3 months, I have prayed for it to rain in Lariabor, Kenya, far more than I've prayed for my daily bread. So Jesus' prayer was in real time. The second observation that I want you to see from this verse is that Jesus' prayer is limited in its scope. Jesus' prayer was concerned with his daily sustenance. He lived believing that God would provide for his every need. Notice that Jesus didn't pray that he would become a homeowner. He didn't pray for a new fishing boat or even a jet ski for that matter. And literally, when his life was hanging in the balance, he didn't even pray for a favorable ruling when he stood before Pontius Pilate. Because from Jesus' perspective, it was not my will be done, but your will be done. Not my kingdom come, but yours. Do you believe that God will provide your daily bread? Do you know? Do you have the confidence that if your cupboards were empty and your refrigerator was bare, that there still would be food? That God somehow would provide? It's kind of an unfair question, isn't it? It's easy to say, yeah, absolutely, I believe that. If you believe that, empty your fridge. Let everything in your cabinets disappear. It's a different question, isn't it? Have you ever found yourself in a situation where you were utterly dependent upon God's provision? You see, I believe that there's a direct correlation between one's reliance upon God and one's personal wealth. The greater one's wealth, the greater one's independence. That is why Jesus said that it was difficult for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. You see, Jesus' prayer was limited in scope to his daily provisions. He wasn't asking the Father to help him earn 10% or to achieve a 10% return on his 401k. He wasn't asking his Father to let him win the lottery, although that would be nice. He wasn't asking his Father for a six-figure income. And guess what? He didn't teach his disciples to pray that way either. Jesus taught his disciples to pray with a limited scope in mind. The third observation that I want to call your attention to is that Jesus' prayer addresses a necessity. I don't know if you've ever traveled to a place where there is significant poverty. I know Janine just returned back from Haiti. And I lived here in the United States and I thought I saw poverty. You know, living in Chicago, I thought I saw poverty. But the first time that I truly ever experienced what it was like to see real poverty was when I traveled to Maralal, Kenya. I just remember one day we were in the city. We'd gone to the bank, and we were parked outside. And we were in Land Rover, I guess. And the missionary we were with went into the bank. And it was a pretty warm day, so all of the windows in the vehicle were down. And we were sitting there, and I don't know, we were there 30 seconds. And all of a sudden, this lady, this elderly woman, reaches her hand into the vehicle, and she grabs my arm. And she's looking intently, she's gazing intently upon me. And if you'd look in her eyes, you saw this desperation. She was obviously malnourished, and she was just begging for anything I could give her. And unfortunately, I had no money, and I had no food. I was totally helpless. It got me thinking and wondering. That trip really challenged me. It got me thinking and wondering, what is a necessity? To help us put it in perspective this morning, I've got two tables, right? And on each table, I've got our daily bread. Right? So on this table, I've got some breakfast food. Got a big breakfast from McDonald's. Eggs, sausage, hot cakes, a biscuit, hash brown, some syrup, that kind of stuff right here. I'm just going to set it here.
I won't.
You know, that's good for breakfast. Oh, I've got some orange juice as well. You know, that's a good meal for breakfast. I've got a Chicago-style hot dog from Quick Trip. Bag of chips for lunch. And with that, you know, kind of the best beverage known to man, a good old Dr. Pepper, which I haven't had in a couple years, so. And then, of course, for dessert, you have to have some cookies. So I got some cookies here. And then we have dinner, right? And so Tim made some of these little, what are these called, Tim, again? Steam buns, like from Taiwan. They're delicious, right? So this is kind of dinner for us. And of course, you know, maybe a piece of fruit and a nice little peach. And then, you know, to kind of keep the calories down, we want to make sure that we have a Diet Coke for dinner, you know. And then we have to have dessert, so I got a little pie here. And in America, that's our daily bread. While in Kenya, daily bread looks more like this. Get some rice, some beans, and if you're lucky, you get clean water. So when Jesus prays, "Give us today our daily bread," I wonder if our perspective is warped a little. I wonder if our perspective needs to change a little. I wonder if we think we need more than we really do. My guess is that this table with the rice and beans and water is more representative of our necessity than that table is. Jesus' prayer was a prayer that spoke to need, spoke to necessity. And the last observation from this verse that I would like for us to consider is that the food that we receive for today, or we receive today for tomorrow, is a gift from God. I think a lot of times that gets lost when we have an abundance, when we have a lot. You see, when you have a little, anytime you get a bowl of rice and beans, you're giving praise to God because it means I get to eat again, at least one more meal. On my second trip to Kenya, I thought that first trip broke me. I thought that first trip really ruined me. But it was actually the second trip. Our church supports a Bible training center there in Lariabor, Kenya, just in Maralal. And we were holding a graduation ceremony for the students that had graduated in previous classes. And I'm getting ready to go to Lariabor, Kenya again in October. And we're going to have the opportunity to do a graduation ceremony for another 40 individuals. But I'll never forget this graduation party that was thrown. They do it all up. They bring in this tent. They set up this humongous tent. They get some goats. And they cook the goats, and they cook a bunch of rice, and they cook a bunch of beans. And they kind of like splurge, and they get some bottles of bottles of Coke, and you know they pass them out to the guests. And I'll never forget, there's like 300 people there, and there's just this limited supply of food. And quite honestly, I didn't need to eat for a week and a half. You know, I would have been just fine. But their culture just kind of requires, hey, you're the guest here. We put you through the line first. And instead of giving you just a small helping, they just kind of pile it on the plate. I'm not a big fan of goat myself, honestly. So I would like take my plate, and when nobody was looking, I'd just dump it on their plate and kind of make it look like I ate the goat. And I'll never forget, I'm sitting under the tent, and I saw these kids who were 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. And I'm looking, and somebody would set down a plate, and they'd go off to grab a drink. And these kids would come over, and they'd had these dirty, like looked like newspaper bags. And they would just pick up that plate and they'd just scoop it all with their hands into this little plastic bag. And then they'd just kind of hide out a little bit until somebody else set another plate down and they kind of scooped it off onto their plate. And it was going on all around the place. And it helped me understand what it means to pray for your daily bread. And if I'm honest, it's nearly impossible for me to pray for daily bread in this place. At least to pray for daily bread with the sincerity of heart. You see, when we have so much stuff, it's so easy to take things for granted. But when you have so little, when you looked into the eyes of those kids who were scraping the food that had been eaten off of the plate into their bag, all of a sudden their faces light up. And all of a sudden they're praising God. God, thank you for the provision of another meal. I don't know about you, but I wonder if I have enough faith to really pray for my daily bread. I mean, if I'm really being honest, I don't think it requires much faith at all for me to pray, give me today the food I need. I live less than a block from Hy-Vee. If my car is out of gas, I can walk. Now, I don't make a ton of money, but on most days I can buy just about anything I want to eat within reason. And most of the time, it is far more than I really need. This past week at our teaching team, Janetta made this statement that I think resonated with the whole team. It definitely resonated with me. She said, "I don't know how to live wanting just enough. I don't know how to live wanting just enough." And yet that was Jesus' prayer. And yet that is what he taught his disciples to pray. God, give me enough for today. You see, this isn't only a struggle for us. It's been a struggle for God's people since the time of Moses. In Exodus chapter 16, we read about the Israelites complaining about Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. There they were complaining. "If only the Lord had killed us back in Egypt, then there we sat around pots filled with meat and ate all kinds of bread, all the bread we wanted. But now you have brought us into the wilderness to starve us all to death." And when God heard their moaning, when God heard their complaining, he provided them with a solution. And he would send them quail in the evenings, and each morning he would give them manna. And they were instructed not to store any for the next day. Talk about our daily bread in real time. Talk about our basic need being met. And God had kind of worked in this into the equation and said, you know, you may be tempted to store it overnight. You may be tempted to try to begin to build this reservoir where if you build up enough, you may not have to rely on me. God said, hey, when you do that, it's just going to be maggots in the morning. But as a result of that, the Israelites began to understand what it was to be dependent upon God. To be dependent upon God for your daily bread. So when I ask the question, how do we pray? Give us today the food we need. How do we pray that authentically? What needs to change? I was thinking this morning, what would it look like if OWC became a place that was filled with people, and I know this is tough, I know this is strong, who yearned to be dependent upon God. How can you do that in our society? I think for some of us, it's helpful for us to reframe this idea of what is a need, right? This probably over here is excess. This may be a less than a need, but it's definitely not that. Some of us need to reframe what it is that defines a need for us, and we need to become content with that instead of demanding that. Now, for some of us, it may require us to begin purging some stuff. It may require us to allow our refrigerator to go bare, or it may require us to allow the food pantry to kind of get to a much less stocked status. For some of us, it may require us to begin to live more simply. And I think those two things are helpful, but I don't think it gets us there. Because here's the reality. God has been incredibly gracious to every single person in this room. And I would dare to say that we as a people fall far short of giving thanks and praise to God for the blessings he's given us. I believe those kids at that graduation were giving more praise to God for the food than I have in 10 years. So I have a hunch. I have a hunch that for most of us, the way that we can once again pray that prayer, give us today the food that we need, I believe there's an antidote. And that is that as a people, we need to become increasingly, sacrificially generous. You see, when we give it away, all of a sudden we can begin to understand the dependence upon God. But if all we do is hoard and accumulate, it drives us further and further away from being dependent and from having a reliance upon God. Now, quite honestly, I realize that that's not a particularly happy message in our society. But if we're going to yearn to be a people who depend and rely on God, who live the way that Jesus taught his disciples to live, it's going to require us to live against the culture, to live against the pull of our culture. To be honest with you, I don't know any other way. I don't know any other way to get to the point where I can be dependent upon God other than to put myself in situations to stretch me so that I can begin to trust and rely on God, so that God can build my faith. See, the Israelites had come to a point where they realized that every evening they'd have quail and every morning that they would have manna, and that God provided that for them. I'm not sure that I have that kind of faith. But I want to take steps to learn and to try to trust God in that manner. Would you pray with me?
Thanks again for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. To learn more, visit our website at olathewesleyan.org or visit us on a Sunday morning for a 10:30 worship gathering. Thanks so much.